A Gift to Remember, A Christmas Story by Michael B. Jones. Here it is again, that time of year, you know, the 2-month stretch between Halloween and Christmas. For so many of us, this can be a very stressful period. Our plates are already full trying to make ends meet, and then bang, Christmas is on us like a hobo on a ham sandwich. As parents, we wonder how in the world we'll be able to provide all those material goods that most of our kids have come to expect on this, the most treasured children's holiday. No doubt about it. Times are lean, especially this year. The whole country has been victimized by an economic downturn that just seems to hang around like luggage in your closet. The fact is, no matter good times or bad, Christmas is a-coming, and soon. The question is, how are we going to handle it? First off, always remember the reason for this season. That alone should provide some measure of comfort. After all, there was Christmas long before anybody ever heard of Walmart, Kmart, Target, or any other Christmas gift smorgasbord. Secondly, have some faith in your kids. Most of them understand things more than we give them credit for. Your kids love you, and when you reciprocate that love, it'll go an awful long way in squashing any disappointment they might feel if they don't get that fancy top-of-the-line baby doll or other toy they've seen advertised for so many weeks prior to Christmas. Kids, young and old alike, love everything about Christmas. The Christmas tree, the gifts, little baby Jesus, and of course Santa Claus. To be honest, I think we all do. I, like many I'm sure, get a little bit nostalgic this time of year. I find myself reminiscing of so many Christmases gone by. Why, there was 1968, when my family lived in Detroit. All 6 of us kids got everything we wanted, real cool stuff. And 1973, of course, the very last time my mother and all of her children shared the holiday together under the same roof. 1974 was our first year living in North Carolina, and our first and last experiment with a silver Christmas tree. 1978 was Mom's last Christmas. Her 1979 abduction and murder cemented that fact. Also 1994, my first Christmas as a parent. There are so many, although the first 3 or 4 I can't really remember. But Christmas 1970 was perhaps the most special of all. We first moved to the town of Rogers City, Michigan in in the summer of 1969. We lived on 2nd Street, right straight up from the summer ball field and wintertime ice rink. The house we lived in was much too small for our family of 6 children and another in the oven. With my stepfather and mother, we actually fit all 8 of us in that place. Amazing. So when we moved in the spring of 70, it was none too soon. The new place was a large farmhouse just out of town, with plenty of land attached. Just perfect for our family. Of all the houses we ever lived in, this was my all-time favorite. During that spring and summer, man, things appeared to be rolling along great. As a matter of fact, it was the first time we had most everything anybody else had. Our family had an ample supply of food, running water, electricity, a television, station wagon, later a van, toys to play with, and even an old snowmobile in the garage. At the time, I remember thinking, could it get any better than this? Well, by the fall of that year, the question had been answered. No. Actually, things got worse. Much worse.
Dashing through the snow, getting ready for Christmas Day, feeling kind of low, don't have much to say. Choirs of Christmas sing at the church house down the road. Holiday cheer is everywhere, I only feel the cold.
I'm not sure why, but my stepfather's work on board a Great Lakes freighter had been slow, even before the usual fleet shutdown that came at the beginning of every winter. Needless to say, we had quickly become poor again. I'm talking strangers dropping food off on their front stoop poor. It was impossible to ignore the tension that the situation imposed upon our family. My mother had always been the family's emotional weather vane. If she was content, generally the whole house was. If she wasn't, nobody was. Though she tried her very best to stay upbeat, the cracks were beginning to show. By this time, Bud, my stepfather, had become abusive to her, and the necessities of life more difficult to obtain. And if that wasn't enough, Christmas was just a few short weeks away.
When I was still a child, Christmas time was magic then, not all this running wild. Do you feel like me? Do you wish somehow you were still that little one who wonders through the power of Christmas love? I want Christmas to feel like the painting on my Christmas card is real. I want Santa and mistletoe, evergreens and big red bows on packages for everyone beneath the Christmas tree. And I want bells to ring. I want to hear the angels sing.
As the weeks turned into days, Mom had become very agitated with the whole situation. She remarked to Bud how she couldn't remember a single year that there wasn't a Christmas tree already in place by this time. "Times are tough," she exclaimed, "but at the very least, we should have a tree. Go get it." Well, that sure lit a fire under his fanny. That very night, he, along with all of us kids, trudged into the woods to claim our prized Christmas tree. What we returned with was a prize, all right. Last prize. I just can't figure why in the world he and my older brothers Donnie and Jeff spent all that energy shimmying to the top of about a 40-foot scrub pine for what must have been the sorriest excuse for a Christmas tree ever. This overgrown twig with peach fuzz was actually the top of the ugly old scrub pine. 8 feet long, gnarly, and naked is about as an accurate description as I can offer. Honestly, there were 4 or 5 branches on the tree, but of course, not one was symmetrical to the other. Nevertheless, upon our shoulders and out of the woods it went.
Christmas was meant to bring. And I want Santa and church bells to ring. And I want choirs of angels to
When we finally got home, Bud had us take it straight to the basement. There we placed it between 2 rickety old saw benches. In the bright light of the basement's single 100-watt bulb, this thing was even worse than before. We were all wondering, all of us kids that is, why did we bring it here? When we looked to Bud for the answer, he was grinning from behind his Abe Lincoln type beard with the bare upper lip. "Donnie, Jeff," he said, "I need you to go back to that old tree. Pick up as many of those limbs as you can. You know, the ones you cut off on the way to the top." Once Donnie and Jeff returned with the branches, the real magic began. As precise as a watchmaker, Bud drilled, spliced, trimmed and glued together one of the finest Christmas trees ever known to man. This thing was a real masterpiece. Boy, were we surprised. Him too, I think. Looking at this marvel of ingenuity that he had masterminded, my stepfather then said, "I guess this will be okay. What you think, guys?" Of course, he said it as nonchalantly as he possibly could, but we could see that he was busting out all over with pride. And with good reason. We had ourselves one first-class, hand-built Christmas tree. But it accomplished his mission, and for the moment, all was well. Mom had her tree, and Bud had redeemed himself from his position as Johnny-come-lately to master Christmas tree provider. Us kids, well, I think we finally felt that little spark of Christmas ignite within ourselves. With much joy, we decorated that old tree that very evening, and it was beautiful. As beautiful as it was, it still looked a little forlorn sitting there all by itself. I could only imagine how good it would look with all those presents underneath it. But then I thought about it. What presents? Normally, by this time of year, not only had our Christmas tree been standing already, but there had also been these little clandestine trips Mom and Bud had made from in-town to home. We always knew what the deal was. Santa Claus was coming to town. This year, things were different. We hadn't seen or heard him make a single one, and I think that a sinking feeling has set in on all of us kids. Santa ain't coming this year. All the good cheer that that Christmas tree had brought seemed to fade away with a thought, for me anyway.
Christmas is coming, the geese are getting fat. Won't you please put a penny in the old man's hat? If you haven't got a penny, a halfpenny will do. If you haven't got a halfpenny, God bless you.
Nevertheless, the Christmas preparations continued. My sister set out all of the little figurines and knick-knacks that my mother had acquired over so many years. My stepfather and older brothers tweaked the Christmas lights for the umpteenth time, and I was assigned to retrieve the family's Christmas stockings from Mom's bedroom closet. Once there, I found them in their usual spot, stuffed into a striped pillowcase, nestled in the back corner, half resting on a pair of old white go-go boots. Of course, these weren't any fancy store-bought Christmas-only stockings, but rather a collection of generations of mismatched socks. I swear to you, some of those socks have been in the family longer than me. When I returned to the living room with them, Mom dumped the whole tangled heap onto the floor. She instructed us kids to pick one out for ourselves. "Make sure there isn't a hole in the toe," she reminded us. Naturally, we attacked that pile like sharks in a feeding frenzy, each grabbing for the best ones. After all was said and done, we had quite a hodgepodge. Everything from gray wool with a large red ankle band to stretch white crews. Our stockings were chosen and carefully hung on a cardboard fireplace that was attached to our homemade bookcase of cinder blocks and planks. Looking at those old socks hanging there just reinforced my already gloomy outlook for Christmas. And my siblings? Well, they were actually enjoying themselves and these Christmas stocking pretenders. "What's wrong with you guys?" I thought. "Don't you get it? We're poor." So, here it was, 3 days before Christmas. And what do we have? Nothing but a hand-built, though beautiful Christmas tree and ratty old socks hanging on a cardboard fireplace.
Christmas is the time of year for being with the ones we love, sharing so much joy and cheer. What a wonderful feeling.
The next day did bring a glimmer of hope. Bud and Mom were heading into town. This must be it. This must be the Santa Claus run. I waited in anticipation for the return, and when they did, I was the first in line to help carry things in from the car. "That's all right, kids," Bud explained. "We only have a couple of bags. I'll get them in." Man, was that music to my ears. The way I figured it, "don't need no help" means we got something here you don't need to see. Things were starting to look up.
The blessed way that he came to walk us. Why can't it be me? All through the year. Each day the same. And that's what I want. It's truly amazing. that spirit of Christmas.
It's amazing how fast one's hopes can be dashed. When Bud brought in the two bags from the car, they were both full of groceries, baking stuff mainly. At that moment, I had ascertained that the Santa Claus must still be in the old wagon, so while the others were gathered in the kitchen, I made an impromptu visit to the car. Nothing. Nothing at all. The car was totally devoid of any gifts. Where could they be? Or would they be? The latter thought stuck in my gut like an anchor. I was worried now. It snowed that Christmas Eve morning, and the scenery outside was magnificent. A glistening white blanket covered the ground as far as the eye could see. Snow filled every armpit of the leafless trees, and the roof of the house was white too, with the exception of the crystal clear icicles that danced from the eaves. It truly looked like a perfect postcard scene, if only it had felt the same way.
Why can't it remain?
Why can't it remain?
Spirit of Christmas, let me hear you.
Why can't it remain?
Why can't it remain?
All through the year.
All through the year.
Each day the same.
Each day the same. And that's what I
Mom continued her baking throughout the day. We kids also helped in dribbles and drabs, especially when it came time to lick a bowl or spoon or taste test one of her culinary creations. It was all so good, except for the sauerkraut balls. I don't like them much. Later in the afternoon, to my surprise, Mom emerged from her bedroom with her arms full of presents. Just a few small ones, but presents nonetheless. This could be the start of something good. Where had she hidden them, I wondered. I thought that I had scoured the house thoroughly. Maybe there was more. I decided it was best not to look anymore. Better to leave well enough alone, I thought. After all, it'll be Christmas morning in just a matter of hours. To be sure, there'll be lots of new presents under that old tree then. Mom wouldn't have brought these gifts out now if that weren't the case. Late that afternoon and early evening, we kids kept ourselves busy playing board games and messing around with our old electric organ in our little music room. I think that each of us gave a whirl at plunking out some Christmas carol while the others sang along. It was a fun time, and not unlike any other night around the house. While we were doing that, Mom was putting the finishing touches on her self-imposed baking assignments, adding even more delicious aromas to the already sweet smell of Christmas that permeated the whole house. Mom had been working hard the last few days, and it was really showing now. There was fudge, both dark and white, with and without nuts. Candies, cookies, cakes, and pies filled the countertops in the kitchen, and any kind of treat that one could imagine was there. Everybody in the house had a chance to taste his or her favorite. Even my one-year-old baby brother Ricky had his opportunity to gum the corner off a piece of fudge. The rest of it ended up smeared all over his face and hands. Later that night, I made my way upstairs to my older brother Donnie's bedroom. Because he was the eldest, he had the privilege of having his own room while the rest of us shared the other two rooms upstairs. Sisters Julie, Shelley, and Davy in one, and my older brother Jeff and I in the other. I liked listening to the radio that he had there. Unbeknownst to him, I had enjoyed it many times before. Donnie didn't like anyone in his room while he wasn't there, but he had gone into town with Bud and Jeff, and Mom had my sisters occupied in the kitchen with her. This afforded me the chance to listen to it without anybody knowing. Once I turned it on, I set the volume low, just loud enough for me to hear. I sure didn't want to get in trouble on this night. The first thing that I heard were the station's call letters sung out.
CKLW, the Motor City.
My brother's favorite station. Mine too. To be honest, I don't think that old radio could pick up any others.
Never been this blue. I never knew the meaning of a heartache. But then again,
the station was playing some sort of top 40 countdown, and they were already down to the top 10. I got myself comfortable by sitting on the floor in front of his only window, my back resting against his bed. I liked both the music and the solitude. Outside, a few errant snowflakes floated by the window. One by one, they would become illuminated when they drifted into the beams cast from the back door light just below, appearing as if by magic from the dark night above. The visual display and the music combined to put me in a, well, melancholy mood. I know that sounds crazy for a kid only 7 years old, but I don't know any other way to describe it. Not good, not bad, melancholy. Once again, I began thinking about the old socks hanging from the pretend fireplace downstairs, and the boxes of powdered milk, powdered eggs, and Cairo corn syrup that showed up at our door about once a week, generally about being so dirt poor. In the midst of all this heavy thinking, I noticed something. Something right in front of me. Donnie's closet door. Yes! Maybe? You see, that closet is the only place in the house that I hadn't investigated in my attempts to find Christmas. I knew it'd be wrong to look. I'd known it all along, but the curiosity was just too much to bear. I was weak. I opened the door.
Don't you fall.
My suspicions were correct. In the dim light of the closet, I saw it. The mound. An old blanket wrapped around something and a jacket clumsily positioned on top. I reached for the jacket, but then hesitated. Should I really do this, I wondered. After a brief moment of contemplation, I decided that I had to. I hadn't come this far for nothing. I carefully lifted the jacket while also taking a mental note of its exact position. My tracks would have to be covered perfectly. With the first step of this operation complete, I now grasped the blanket in my trembling hands and slowly lifted it to reveal the treasure that I had so eagerly sought. There it was, our family's Christmas. I cautiously reached out for the first rectangular box. In the dark of the closet, I couldn't tell exactly what it was. It would take closer examination in the meager light of the doorway to determine that this was a game of life. Setting it to the side, I reached for more. Next out was another game, Yahtzee. Again, I reached for the shrinking mound. This time, what I grasped wasn't any box. It was something with what felt like a handle. And it seemed to be stuck. With a little persuasion, I finally freed it from the pile. I quickly ascertained that I was holding the face mask of a football helmet. I couldn't believe it. I had wanted one of these for so long. Wanting to get a better look at it, I cracked the closet door open a bit wider to let in more light. In an instant, what had been exhilaration turned to bitter disappointment. In the brighter light, I could see that this wasn't a new helmet at all. In fact, it was an old-style helmet with raised ear blisters and a single face bar. This type of football helmet hadn't been used in years. There was something else, too. Not even the new coat of burgundy paint could hide the fact that I had seen this helmet before. This was an old helmet that my cousins and I shared a couple of years before when we lived downstate. I couldn't believe it. I was getting some old hand-me-down. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas to me. I looked further and discovered that most of our Christmas was pre-owned. At the bottom of the pile, there was a duffel bag full of old dresses, trousers, shirts, sweaters, hats, mittens, and winter boots. All were clean and folded. but not a single one knew. Was this some kind of cruel joke? Fully disappointed now, I placed the items back into the army surplus duffel bag, making sure to keep them in the same order in which I had retrieved them. With that done, I placed the Gaines blanket and jacket back on top of the old bag, exactly reproducing the original heap. Satisfied that I had covered my tracks, I gave the closet a final long look. Having nothing more to see, I closed the door. I returned to my spot next to Donnie's bed. Looking out the window, I saw that the scattered few snowflakes that had been falling earlier was now a tumbling stampede of thick, wet snow. Occasionally, a large flake would plaster itself to the glass. Backlit by the light from below, the slowly melting image seemed transformed into an angelic image, perhaps trying to ease the loneliness that was overtaking me just now. The radio also played its part in setting the somber scene. The countdown was down to the number one song. I sat there feeling sorry for myself while the haunting chorus of "Don't you remember you told me you loved me, baby?" played softly in the background. The lonely ballad by the Carpenters, Superstar, sure seemed appropriate at the time. Although I didn't feel much like a superstar, I felt embarrassed. Embarrassed to be so poor.
Don't you remember you told me you loved me, baby? You said you'd be coming back this way again, baby. Baby, 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 oh baby.
I love you, I really do.
I left Donnie's room the way I found it and slinked away from the scene of the crime with all the stealth of a veteran sneak thief. Nobody will even know that I was there, I thought, as I descended the staircase. I stopped one step up from the downstairs hallway. At a right angle from this vantage point, I could see the Christmas tree and stockings in the living room. As I poked my head around the corner fully to the right, I could see the kitchen and about half of the dining room and dining room table. There at the end of the table was Mom hovering over some dish she had just placed, tweaking it into perfection. My sisters were obviously at the other end of the table doing something, because Mom would occasionally raise her head making conversation with the concealed in. Things had been stressful, but I didn't think that she had gone loony yet. From where I was watching, though, it sure looked like she was talking to an empty room. This view of my mother offered me something that I hadn't noticed before. As I watched her go about her task, I was struck by her diligence to detail. She made at least one each of her oldest children's favorite dishes. This meant that there was at least 6 different desserts on top of her already full menu. It was her way of telling each of us that we were special to her, and that she loved us. I also noticed her smile as she talked to my sisters at the other end of the table. It seemed to be a forced smile, though not at all fake. Strained may be the best way to describe it. It hadn't dawned on me until just then that maybe things weren't so great for her right now. Obviously, our financial situation was in ruins, and her marriage was falling apart. Yet she was determined not to let either of these situations be an excuse for a miserable Christmas. She was playing her part, and she was doing so perfectly. Standing there on those steps with Mom totally oblivious to my presence, I saw for the first time in my young life what Christmas really looked like. What I saw bore no resemblance to what I had seen in the closet, nor any of the other carefully placed Christmas decorations, not even the tree. No, what I saw can't be seen with the naked eye, but it's there, right there in front of you. You need only look.
Just to touch you once again.
To you and all your family, your neighbors and your friends, may all your days be happy with the joy that never ends. May peace and love surround you at Christmas time and all the whole year through.
It's incredible how fast one can grow up, sometimes even in a brief moment. I felt guilty now for what I had done earlier, but I also realized that it could not be undone. I had to live with it, and I have for all these many years. After our supper of goulash and buttered bread, the family gathered in the living room around the Christmas tree and the cardboard fireplace. Although it was getting late, Mom was insistent on all of us singing some Christmas carols together. Mom loved to sing, especially with her children. I think that she had a secret dream of transforming us into some sort of Partridge Family singing group. Though we never did do that, we did sing together a lot. And it was always fun. Sitting there amongst my family, singing Christmas favorites with them, eased the loneliness and disappointment that had plagued me earlier. Mom was beautiful, rocking there in her favorite chair, baby Ricky in her lap. Her other six children circled around her on the floor. As I scanned the faces of my siblings, I saw nothing but smiles. Perhaps they already knew what I had just learned, what I had been gifted. Perhaps I had more learning yet to come. Either way, I was okay now. What did it matter if all the toys and clothes that we would get in the morning were hand-me-downs? It didn't. This is what Christmas is about. The love of family, the memories to cherish, and the love of God. as I drifted off to sleep that Christmas Eve. I believed in the miracle and magic of Christmas again. I believed in Santa Claus again, too. Not so much as a real living person, but as a presence in my heart, a presence put there by a loving mother who tried so very hard. Kids, it's Christmas morning. Santa's been here, my mother sang from the bottom of the steps. I leapt from my bed, joining the stampede of children to that wonderful old Christmas tree, laughing all the way.